are listening to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience. Coming at you from the back of an 86 Dodge Ram van on the rolling foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the great forest deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. This week, we're joined by none other than Mel Priestley, our resident astrologer, as we go over some of the past couple months of space weather and look forward the next 6 months. Mel, how are you doing?
I am fantastic, Tim. Thanks so much for having me back. You've been on the road.
Yeah, been on the road for a year. Communing with Odin and others. So, good times.
Definitely. So,
how have you been? What have you been up to? Tell me about anything cool going on.
I feel like I always say, the usual, but what is the usual? It's so boring. I got to find out something better to say. But no, I mean, so what's interesting about this year is it started off hot, like, and the space weather was great for it too. Like, I don't know how your January and February were, but like, it was, everything was aligned to be really productive and good. Like, Mars was in Capricorn and it was all fired up. And I was like doing lots, getting lots done. It was great. Day job as well as, you know, astrology and stuff. We were all chugging along good. And then like we hit basically eclipse season and I burned the fuck out. Like, I just kind of hit a wall. And I was kind of expecting that anyway. There's a bunch of other stuff that happened in the spring too with the space weather, but mostly like, it was eclipses and it was in my 6th and 12th house, right? And so at first I thought I was safe, and then I was not safe. So the lunar eclipse happened. It was like a degree off my moon in my 6th. So I was like pretty much expecting to get sick, and I didn't for a week. Then I got sick for like a 2 weeks, and then better, and then sick for another week. So that kind of derailed everything. But like alongside with that, I don't know, it was not just physically being sick, but mentally I just felt like completely drained. And I have not really been doing, I didn't do any astrology work really at all, other than like occasionally, you know, looking at transits and chatting with friends. But I stopped writing. Like, if you go on my website, like, there's nothing from the beginning of the year. So again, I started off at the beginning of the year doing all this stuff, and then just bam, nothing. And then just like in the last week and a bit, all of a sudden it's coming back. And there's a few things related to that. And I'm just trying to decide how much I want to divulge here. But suffice it to say that I had gotten really involved in the in a few different astrology communities. Like, I'm involved in my local group and I'm still with them. And I had also become the lead of OPA. So OPA, the Organization for Professional Astrology, their Canada satellite. And I quit that. So like a couple weeks ago, I just said, I'm out. Like, and it was, I hadn't even been doing a lot anyway.
That tracks with my experience of the past couple of weeks. I've talked to, I'm just going to interrupt you here.
No, go for it.
My bad. I don't think there's anyone that I've talked to that hasn't had some kind of trial or major transition in the past couple of weeks. And we can go into more of like what that is. I don't know.
Yeah.
Personally, I have some theories that aren't quite astrological, but may fit into some, you know,
energy-wise. Energy-wise, full for me, it was very obvious. It was, I've had Uranus squatting on my ascendant for like a while, and it was exact for a while there. And it's just a degree off now, but it's still very close. But yeah, I quit OPA, and like literally that day, I just felt like a block lift. Like, I don't know what it was. And again, I hadn't been really working with them as much. Like, we were kind of on hiatus. But for whatever reason, as soon as I sent that email and said, sorry, I'm out, it was like instant unblocking. And then I also offered that same day, or no, it was the next day, whatever, I gave a free reading to someone who's, you know, friend of a friend and a coworker who needed it and she couldn't afford it. And I do this every so often where I offer someone a free reading and I enjoy it. And I have found, and I actually went through the history of the last 2 years that I've done paid readings. And there is a direct correlation between when I offer a free reading and then I get a random paid reading, usually like super fast. It was shocking. So that day I gave her the free reading, I got two new paid bookings like immediately. And I hadn't had any in the previous like 2-3 months because again, I had closed down my bookings though because burnout, right? So I kind of stopped doing consults for a bit. But yeah, and so then I went back and I tracked it. And it was like every single time I gave a free reading, I got one or two new clients within like a day. Sometimes it was while I was giving the reading, someone else booked. So
that makes sense from a
charity.
Yeah, that makes sense from an energy perspective too. From my experience, like if I'm not offering something, usually there's some kind of blockage. Mm-hmm. And the moment that I'm able to like show up and offer something, that's when like it starts flowing again. And it comes to me as well in a lot of ways. But also, I think there's like a merit thing going on there, right? Like the planets are like, all right, cool, let's throw you a bone. Like,
like I think they like that. Like they enjoy when you do that. And yeah, so for whatever reason, obviously my path was not with OPA because as soon as I severed the ties with them and then, you know, gave this free reading and then now all of a sudden like floodgates are opening and I can feel it within me. Also, I've kind of had writer's block as well. And I can feel that lifting. Like nice. I'm like, oh no, I'm planning stuff out. So yeah, so it's all good. So things go along.
Great feeling that is when that lifts.
It is. Yeah. And you don't realize it necessarily. Like if you're a writer, or even a creative type, when you're in the heat of being blocked, you're kind of like, sometimes you're just bleh, right? And then when you get out of it, you're like, oh man, I was blocked.
Oh, I can't even see it. And it's funny because, okay, like, I'm glad I threw it onto you first after you asked me how I was doing because that tracks actually like quite a bit with my experience too. For anyone that doesn't know, I've been doing a over-the-road trucking job for the past year. And there's a lot of ups and downs related to that too. Like obviously like you're just on the road, it's going to get like that. But I didn't really know how blocked I was. And part of it is like from not being able to do this, or at least not thinking I was able to do this. Like there just, it wasn't like, that's a blockage, right? Like not like if I think I can't do it, it's the same as not being able to do it basically. Right. Mm-hmm. But then in the past couple weeks, there's been so much that's kind of started flowing. You know, I came home and I went and visited my brother and went on vacation and I just kind of had it hit me and this was kind of the plan all along, but it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like you've been doing this for a year. It's time to like, try to find something here, find something local. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the process of trying to do that now, but it also, it's like, once I did that and I made that decision, a whole bunch of stuff just went like one by one. And it unblocked a lot for me. And it's also kind of like, you know, because I think we've talked about fallow periods multiple times before. I think that's definitely something that happens, especially in my magical practice, but just in general. And I think, you know, like we have that. And in my case, it was like going out on the road and having a whole bunch of learning and then coming home and integrating it like all at once. And so all of a sudden I'm like, oh shit, was I just depressed for like 6 months or something? And I didn't know it.
Maybe.
That's also part of like part of having a 12th house moon, I think. But
Yeah. Well, for you too. I mean, like Jupiter just went into your first house like yesterday. Like
hell
Jupiter
yeah.
went into Gemini last.
Big boy Jupe in the first house.
Yeah. So I just concluded Jupe in my first. And it was good, but I'm looking forward to him being in my second, so he can hopefully make my pocketbook fatter instead of my belly. But you know, because I totally did gain a little bit of weight, which is like a classic Jupiter in your first. I mean,
expansion
in Taurus too. Yeah, it expands. And what does it expand?
I'm gonna use it to get swole.
Do that. That's good.
I always say that shit. I think I said the same thing when Mars was entering my first house. But
you did, and then you hurt yourself, which is also Mars.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That is what happened. That's funny.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it was your shoulder too, I think, when, again, Gemini's the arms.
Yes, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. It's almost too good.
No, but it's all good. Yeah, so Jupiter into Gemini just happened yesterday, and you know, so from when we're recording this, so that's May 25th, and it was... So it's good. I like that shift. I mean, but the thing about Jupiter in Gemini is he's technically debilitated because he's opposite the sign he rules, Sagittarius, right?
So, well, I'm technically debilitated too. So that works out.
No. Like the planets in debility, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Jupiter's still Jupiter. Like he's still going to try and bring the good stuff. But, I think it's going to be more... I don't know what it's going to be, actually. I think it's going to play kind of interesting and fun with all of the other, like, what is information anymore? What do you believe? Nothing, because everything's AI fakery.
Okay. I have a very optimistic opinion about that.
Yeah. Good.
And here it is. I think I've talked about this before, but why not just rehash it? I think that the best thing that can happen to us right now is for us to not be able to trust anything that we hear on the internet. Because we completely rely on it 100%, totally and completely. So it's going to be a tough little transition. However, I see this kind of like, to me, it's like, okay, great. So I have no other choice but to rely on things like intuition, divination, even like word of mouth, maybe. That would be cool, you know? And so there's all these kind of modes that kind of, I mean, they haven't gone by the wayside because they're definitely still being practiced in circles. But it's like, okay, if I can't trust anything I see, then I almost like it's either I'm going to be in a land of complete delusion or I have to come up with another mode of gathering information. And for me, like the best way of doing that right now is just going to the spirits and trusting the spirits and diving headfirst into that. And, you know, it's going to be a wild ride. That is for sure.
Yes. Yes, it is. And what you just described is very much the vibe of Saturn in Pisces, I think. Saturn, Neptune in Pisces, I should say, which is really the biggest. You know, if you think of what's the big astro news, astro weather for the next year and a bit, it's Saturn, Neptune, right? So those two are coming together in Pisces. They're not there yet. But they spend like all of 2025, essentially, like very close together, dipping in and then back from Aries and Pisces. So their conjunction doesn't go perfect until actually February 2026. But they spend like, again, like a year, basically, like just super dancing. Close together, just dancing together. Yeah. And then their conjunction finally perfects February 2026 at zero Aries. I don't know. It's going to be wild because I feel like, and I think I maybe mentioned this before, I can't remember if it was on the air or not, but definitely I've talked to several people about this, the Neptune event horizon, which is like, I just can't see past it. Like, I just don't know, right? Like,
I just can't not think of Sam Neill when I think of event horizon, you know?
Totally, right?
Where we're going, we don't need eyes to see, you know?
Totally. Yeah, that's actually a great motto for it. So yeah, because like Neptune's illusions and delusions and hopes and dreams, and Saturn is like, you know, trying to maintain control and kind of failing and just trying to make order out of this, but unable to. And so as they come together, two very different sort of energetic signatures, it's like, what is that going to mean for the world? I don't know. You can throw out all sorts of crazy predictions, but there's going to be a definite tone shift next spring. So like in March to May, because they both jump into Aries then. And so that, I think, is going to give us a little bit of a flavor of then what we're going to experience the next year, early in the year, for their actual conjunction. But yeah, it'll be...
So is their actual conjunction going to be in Aries?
Yeah, zero Aries.
Okay. Oh, it's zero Aries. Wow.
Yeah, like right at the start. Yeah.
That's at the very beginning of the entire zodiac, right?
It is. It is. Yeah. I mean, from the tropical zodiac perspective, yeah, zero Aries, when the sun hits that, that is spring in the northern hemisphere, right? And that's the considered the, yeah, the start of the zodiac.
So that's like almost like the, you could see that sort of as the beginning of a whole new.
A whole new world.
Don't you dare close your eyes.
Yes.
Again, here we go to eyes. Interesting. Okay, cool. Because I was going to ask you to go into the archetypes real quick of Saturn and Neptune, but you did that. So, the event horizon of Neptune is, can you explain one more time what that is? You may have just done it, but I'm obtuse. So.
No, I didn't really. I just kind of named it. But so I'm calling it that just because it seems like this wall that I just can't see past. Like Neptune is illusion and delusion. It's just ephemeral, dreamy, I don't know what. And so I just see that. I just see it all looks murky and confusing and there's spirits and ghosts everywhere and aliens.
Awesome. And
so that's fun. But I'm also like, what does that mean? I don't know. So we'll see when Saturn gets there.
You know,
he's going to start. Yeah. He's going to start trying to make order out of that in some way.
Yeah. You know what it reminds me of? And it's going to get real weird real quick here, but you know, that's how we do. It reminds me of the operation. I think it's Operation Looking Glass, or maybe it's Project Looking Glass. It's one of my favorite like conspiracy theories. And the idea is, and it's somehow it's connected to Bob Lazar too. It's like the alien tech that they salvaged from Roswell, like somehow was like used to operate this project. And the idea is, and it's like mostly from this one guy in an interview, I can link it for anyone if they're interested. And the idea is they used this technology to look forward in time. And they were able to input variables and see what the outcomes would be based on the variables they put in. And you know, the ominous they, we're just going to stay with that.
Yeah.
Government agencies or whoever was doing this. And what they found was, and this guy says it's 2012, but whatever. What they found was there was a point at which no variables they entered could change what was going to happen.
Okay.
And like it kind of made them start freaking out. Because like it's game over for them, right? Like no matter what, this is going to happen. Like they lose their source of control.
Okay, so I was going to ask, what's the event? Is it them losing power then?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so because then at that point, like they become like it goes out of their hands. Like they were able to like exercise some sort of control, but now at this point, nothing they put into the system is going to change the outcome. And whatever that outcome is, I don't know. So, but I think it's a really interesting thought experiment to look at. And it's actually another hopeful one where like, okay, what if they're in the middle of losing the game, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's maybe signs about that. So I've definitely heard that, or the version I think I heard, or maybe it's the same thing. I don't know. But it was like they could see up to a certain point in the timeline. And the only way that they could see up to that point is if Trump became president. Again, take this with a grain of salt. I don't know for sure. Yeah. Right. But some people have said it that way.
There's definitely like a QAnon angle this whole thing. Yeah,
totally. Right. So again, guys, I'm not QAnon. I'm just repeating like stuff I've heard, but I do think it's very interesting and it corresponds with Neptune and Saturn in Pisces where, the Neptune event horizon, no one can see past like basically 2024-5. So whatever comes after that, like it actually is very heartening to me if the powers that be also were as blind as we are, because then, hey, it's an even playing field kind of in a way, right?
Yeah, totally. It's a nice anarchist, dream world. So the way I like to think about it too, another way I like to look at it is I lost my train of thought.
Derailed.
Okay, I got it back. Okay, so what if the idea is that this is how I like to foresee the future personally. And I think what we're going into is this. I just have a gut feeling about it. That's going to have to be enough. that we, the new world that is coming, we're actually not able to imagine what it's going to be like, because we're not yet at the consciousness stage of consciousness evolution to like if we were able to imagine it, it would be here, right? But it's beyond our imagining. Like, we have to, and there's an agency there. Like, we actually have to birth it into being. We have to create something new and go into something new. And that might involve taking like what works from the past and integrating it in a new way. But I don't think it's like this, like, applying the old tactics is going to work at all. It's like, we have to kind of come up with a totally new thing. And that really feeds into like what you're talking about. Like, it, so if I can't even comprehend it, how am I going to predict it? And this is kind of like the conversation we had leading up to this, off air, you know, and this is of course like my Gemini perspective. It's like, how can I stay agile? How can I stay agile in my thinking to, and this is an Age of Air thing too. So I think, you know, personally, I think it's good advice, but, you know, obviously I'm just going to think like this anyway and just see what happens. If I can, you know, kind of keep agile in my thinking, then I can kind of dodge, duck, dip, dive, dodge my way through whatever comes.
Absolutely. And again, yeah, spoken like a true Gemini, but we should all take a page out of that book. You say Age of Air, it's true. Some people are going to be able to do this better than others, right? Like, people who maybe have more air influence or more mutability influence in their charts, like, they're going to be more willing to roll with the punches, so to speak. Those of us who are a bit more fixed, and I kind of am, I'm kind of fixed. I'm also kind of cardinal, so I can start new things too. But yeah, they may have a little bit more struggle with it. But yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's very clear to anyone you talk to that, like, the world is very different now than it was. And I hate that the pandemic is the milestone marker we use now, but hey, it works. Because what happened in the pandemic, the old structures got torn down, and now we're in a place of like, now what? Now where do we go here? Capricorn institutions were destroyed by that Saturn-Pluto conjunction in Capricorn in 2020. And then now it's like, okay, Saturn's now in the oceans of Pisces, swimming with the fishes and trying to figure out like what's what. And then, yeah, maybe when he gets at zero Aries, it's like, I mean, that's the Mars's battlefield, right? So it's like full speed ahead to whatever the future will be.
Yeah, the COVID stuff, I just have more and more. It's like, as we get hindsight to that, I was talking to my brother about this. And of course, we talk about it through the lens of like these video games called The Elder Scrolls. I'm sure listeners may be familiar with them. Yeah, but
they're great. I love those.
Oh, hell yeah. So like there's this thing that happens in the lore of The Elder Scrolls. And like some of the games, I think, take place during these periods. And that's how they explain like you being able to play it out in different ways. Mm-hmm. But it's called a Dragon Break. And it's basically time breaks, like the god of time goes mad for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so it's a historical period in which different people in different regions are able to experience different events occurring. Like, I had a completely different experience than the next person during COVID. And like, we might see that completely differently, but we both experienced a reality. It's just that we didn't experience
reality.
Bifurcation. Yeah. Yes, we didn't experience the same reality. It's like it was like this period of, for the lack of a better word, it almost like was a schizoid break in the fabric of reality. And so we all kind of experienced something different. We come out of it, and it causes a lot of and the games, and I think this bears out in reality too, like these games are always prophetic to me. I want to do like a whole episode on this, but like it causes a lot of conflict because people aren't able to see eye to eye after that experience. But if we're able to look at it with that in mind, we're able to more readily integrate the experience of like, okay. And so I think this is really, really important for astrology, right? Because based on my chart and what the planets are doing in relation to me, I might have a very different experience from you, but that's where the medicine is, right? Like,
yeah, some people had a great 2020.
Yeah, I did
actually. I actually just talking to a client who she was like, you know what? I know I shouldn't say this, but 2020 was like one of the best years of my life, and I made some really important strides forward. And I said, if you can say that, you're allowed to say that. Like, yes, it was also the worst year of many other people's lives, but not everyone experiences reality the same. But yeah, I love what you said about the Elder Scrolls, because like life imitates art, right? Like Oscar Wilde said, but it's true. Like what you just described in those video games, this is basically literally what happened to us. So
100%. And I think that's
cool.
just kind of like, and I think the internet sort of, I think it magnifies that, or at least it allows us to more readily compare a wholly disparate experience to someone that had, obviously the other experience. In a way that, like, back in the day, I'd have to like ride a bunch of leagues on a horse or something. And by that time, there's enough time in between to where it's like, okay, well, the distance and the time makes it harder to see what's going on. But with the internet, it's like instantly, oh, I'm experiencing this. Well, I'm experiencing this,
Right, and that's been the craziest thing, and why things have gone these ways is because, again, everyone experiences everything at the same time. Because of the internet, right? Like so things that are happening a world apart, right? Like in a different part of the world, feel like they're happening to you when they're not. And again, this is what we'll all need to kind of separate for ourselves is, yeah, there's bad things happening in places of the world. There always is, and there always will be, unfortunately. I'm not a utopianist. I don't see us ever getting to like Age of Aquarius, whatever that even means, right? But
We can if you buy my product.
Oh yeah, right.
It's only
It's the other thing that drives me crazy are these
$39.99.
people who are horny for the apocalypse, because there's so many people out there who are still and I kind of fell into that over the pandemic for a bit, I guess, because it felt like
Oh,
the
yeah,
apocalypse. Maybe
totally.
it was in a way, but yeah. Then now I'm just like, nah, like stop it, like just stop, guys.
I've settled back in the apocalypse occurred about 2,000 years ago or more, and we have just been living in the ruins ever since.
Yeah, or if you go Graham Hancock style, and we've been doing this over and
Oh,
over
yeah,
because
totally.
think time
It's a
goes way
cycle.
back. Yeah.
That's something that I've kind of been has been revealed to me by spirits as well. Like, this kind of is a cyclical thing. Like we it's not A to B, it's A to B to B to A to A to B to B to A.
We've been here before, we'll be here again. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the whole Terrence McKenna thing of what the Roman Empire falls like eight times an hour, or I don't remember exactly what he said, but it's
Right.
something like that.
Or the Philip K. Dick, The Empire Never Ended, right? I think
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what
So
the
those
quote
two
is.
like are
Yeah.
kind of like I like the interplay of those. Okay, so I'm gonna go on a tangent right now because this is something I've been wanting to talk about for a while. Have you seen the? It's a recent meme, and the meme is this. It's a woman filming, and she, and there's multiple people that do this. There's a ton of videos of it. You can look it up. But she'll go to her boyfriend or her husband and ask him, "Hey, how often do you think about the Roman Empire?" And the answer is always like baffling to her. And like the guy will be like, "Oh, not much, like five times a week." And she's like dies laughing, and it's really funny because it's like, wow, that is that not a lot? Because I think about the Roman Empire multiple times a day. And so what I started thinking about this from a Philip K. Dick perspective, because Philip K. Dick's whole thing is that like all history from 700 to 1945 is a false reality matrix that is being basically was generated. It's not real. And that we all are still people that were alive during the Roman Empire. That's what the Empire Never Ended thing is. So I'm like, damn, what if we all can't stop thinking of the Roman Empire because we're from that motherfucker?
Yeah.
I don't know. That may not go anywhere, but I've just been thinking about that.
Yeah, I can't say I have much to say in response to that, other
You
than
just, yes.
Yes, correct.
Anyway, so let's get back to the astrology. Let's see. I've got a list here. I know you have a list. What's the next big thing? So we've got that, the Neptune-Saturn dance that we were talking about. What are some other things that we can like kind of look forward to coming up here soon? I know we talked about Jupiter just entered Gemini.
Yeah, he's there for the next year. So that's fun. I mean, it's fun for the Gemini people or the mutable people. So if you're, you know, if you're a Gemini, I think that'll be good times.
We always going to have fun.
Yeah. But also Virgos, Sagittarius, and Pisces. So what, I mean, it does set up the, like a square relationship between Jupiter and Saturn. So it's not going to go, it's not going to get exact until next year, but that will happen, right? So Jupiter will be kind of, I don't know, conflicting a little bit with whatever Saturn's doing with Neptune and Pisces. So that'll add some kind of interesting flavor, but that's a next year thing. I mean, for the second half of 2024, the biggest things would be, Pluto actually goes, so Pluto's in early Aquarius right now, and then September 1st dips into the very last degree of Capricorn for one more time, just for a couple months, and then November 19th, 2024 then is Pluto in Aquarius for good, for 20 years, so good enough, right? So that's been really tied to a lot of the AI stuff, as just one example, but future tech of all kinds, and again, very Age of Air. So Pluto and Aquarius, and it's really been kind of pinging that last gasps of the Capricorn empire, if you will, and then whatever the new Aquarius thing is going to be, like the new neuromancer-ish, you know.
Yeah, cyber. Neuromancer. I just read that.
Yeah. Oh, did you? Was it on the
road
for
the first time? Yeah.
That is required reading, and I've said this for years, it's a great book, but it's absolutely required reading for Pluto and Aquarius.
Yeah, it's rad.
Yeah.
I love all cyberpunk stuff, really. I mean, I'm like, I don't really want to live in it, but it's so cool.
No. Yeah, it's cool to read about, fun to visit. Yeah, we don't want to live through it. Some of us are. Yeah,
and fun to visit, don't want to live there.
Will. Yeah, there will be cyberpunks, and there already is, but it's not going to go the way it did in Gibson's novel, hopefully.
I do think, and I'm trying to think about what I was thinking about when I read it. There's the whole kind of interesting interplay of I didn't really get the name, the title, until I read it and was like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. It is a it is a computer necromancer. Like, it's an AI necromancer. Oh, and so there's this really interesting idea there with the haunted internet, that I think is very much in play, right?
Mm, definitely, yeah.
With the AI stuff, only more so, right? Like the ghost in the machine.
Yeah, I haven't been paying much attention to any of the AI stuff. Like, it just seems like it's everywhere now, and there's always headlines on it, but it feels to me like some of the panic has died down about it, but now it's almost like the reality setting in. So, I mean, I think of an example from my day job where, they're starting to use AI for stuff, you know, and it's for mundane, boring, worky stuff, right? But it is literally taking jobs, right? So it's like, okay, well, what a person used to do, now a computer does. So, you know, it's going to be something that we're all going to just see all the time. But I don't know how I feel about it. Like, it's really common now, in my meetings, which are, a lot of them are held through Microsoft Teams, Zoom basically, right? So virtual meetings, for someone, there's this, I can't remember the name of it. It's like an AI bot that transcribes the meeting for you and takes notes and stuff. And then I just saw an ad last night for, what was it called? I'm not going to remember, but it's a new Microsoft product. And from the looks of it, it's AI. And it was literally a woman is summarize the meeting notes. And then it goes boom. And in a second, and the whole meeting notes summarized. And I'm like, you know what? I'm okay with that. Cause right now I got to summarize my own meetings. So I get, but then I also don't trust it. I'm like, okay, cool. It would be cool to have my notes summarized in a second instead of the 10 minutes or whatever it takes me to do it. But can I trust that what that AI says is actually what happened in the meeting? Because
yeah, they're not great.
Wild
sometimes.
Examples. No, no. What was the one I saw recently? It was like a prompt and it was like, how do I make food spicier? And it was like, add gasoline and light it on fire. And I was like,
right.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Delicious. Do it.
At 3 minutes and 20 seconds into the meeting, Tim proposed, you know, full scale shoes as hats policy.
Right.
Like just some shit that doesn't even make any sense.
And I think Jupiter in Gemini will cause a little bit of that to increase because, again, debilitated Jupiter. So he's just here to have a good time. And some of that might be like also just throwing some random misinformation into the mix.
Oh, the
like,
trickster? Hey, the trickster archetype?
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah, I think so.
I could dig it. What I've been seeing a lot about, I've been seeing, and I don't like really look at it a lot either. I've been seeing a lot about how unsustainable it is, really. Like, apparently every time, and I don't know if this is true, but like I read some stuff that said every time you put a prompt into an AI, it's like pouring out a 16-ounce bottle of water. It takes that much water to like cool the computers that do the processing.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah.
I've also heard that every time you do a Google search, it's the same amount of energy that it takes to boil a cup of water. So sounds like similar type of
dang, so we could be making eggs.
I could have egg salad.
We could be boiling eggs. Egg salad, baby. Egg salad party. Fuck, we're doing it wrong. Okay, but okay, so my thinking there is like, okay, so the next thing I read that sort of was downstream from that was saying how this is not going to be sustainable unless we have like some big jump in the way we produce energy. And so it almost seemed to me like, okay, is this like a almost like a soft landing of some energy tech, you know, like, I don't know.
Like some like things they may have gotten or something off of alien craft cold fusion, you know, the whole.
Yeah. And they like, we're like, hey, we discovered this. Like, you've just been holding it for the right moment.
Right. And also stole it from aliens or whoever.
Yeah.
Right?
Or it was donated from aliens, which is what, I don't know if you've been listening to Diana Pasulka.
Oh, yeah, I have. You know, what's funny. I have her new book, Encounters, and I got it right after it came out and I read it. And then again, slammed into a wall. I don't know what's related. So I actually have the last like two or three chapters to read. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I almost enjoy listening to her talk on podcasts more so than reading the book. The book is great.
She's great.
But she's really well spoken and just, man, her stories, there's some wild stuff. And I think I like hearing a human tell it out loud versus just reading a book about it.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I think she's really engaging as a guest and a speaker. You know, if she ever wants to come on here, she's welcome to. But yeah, there's some interesting implications there. I've been thinking a lot about the person in the books, Tyler, who is what Tyler Durden is like the code name she gives him so she won't reveal his
Tyler
alias to anyone that hasn't read it.
He dropped her. He won't talk to her anymore.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because, I'm actually sad about that because he played he's a key role in the first book and then in the second book. And the reason he stopped talking to her was because I can't remember exactly the details.
Didn't he have like a radical conversion experience?
No, I don't think so. It was that she was talking to people and he was like, if you talk to those people and get involved with them, we're done.
My
because
gosh.
Of, yeah.
Whatever weird like back channels are going on in the alien community is just wild to me. Like there's...
Right.
Why is that such a, the only word I can think about for it is like dirty. And I don't mean like in a moral way. I just mean like, it's very muddy, you know, like it's very, there's just a lot going on that doesn't make sense to me.
And on purpose and
definitely on purpose.
And you have to ask why, and why is it that now aliens are real, right? We know that. And we knew that already because we're weirdos. But you know, with
regardless
Diana's
of like
book,
where you think their origin is, right? Like,
right. And whatever they are. And like, but now that, you know, with Diana's book and the work that she's been doing, and which is directly related to, you know, the all of the disclosure stuff that's happened over the last couple of years, it's now a provable fact in like, you know, the U.S. court or whatever it is, right? In Congress, it's on record as like, yes, we have alien materials, and what did he say, biologics, which, you know, very specific wording, which is interesting. But anyway, so we have alien tech, aliens are real, and they visit Earth, and they do it all the time, and we have some of their stuff, and life just goes on. So I mean, to weirdos like me, I'm just like, why isn't this everyone out there? You know, when we were kids in the 90s watching the X-Files, we thought, oh man, when the government finally discloses and blah blah blah. Well, they did disclose, and nothing changed, because everyone's, I guess, online.
Yeah, and the way they do it, the way they do it is exactly so that won't happen. Like,
yeah,
they kind of like, they obfuscate it and couch it in the most boring.
So boring. Yeah.
Context.
It's like no one cares, because they're like, oh, it's like a court thing, whatever.
Right. So it's either really boring, or it's like some outlandish personality is revealing mm-hmm. like 50% stuff that's true, 50% stuff that's total lies, mm-hmm. so that you can't even really see. It's classic. The disinfo campaign is strong, right? And
sure.
Yeah, so it's really like, it's the story of Enoch and Prometheus happening again, like before our eyes, right? Or like maybe it's just never stopped and it's just like continuing and we just get to see it through a different lens. But that's what it looks like to me. And that's what I was going to say, like I've been thinking about, is that Tyler Durden guy, mm-hmm. you know, he basically got downloads, you know, psychic downloads,
yep.
that showed him how to produce certain technologies, and some of them were biological, like medicines and stuff,
yep.
that could only be produced in zero gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And he like went and did the experiments because he had, you know, the connections to do that, and got the patents and stuff. And it's like almost like, to me, really mirrors the story that Enoch went up into space with the angels and was able to like basically all like changed his perception of dimensionality, which is kind of like what's happening in zero gravity, right? Like your dimensionality is changing. What's up is no longer up. What's down is no longer down. And it, like, it's unlocking a new way of perceiving reality, which allows you to basically access new technologies, new ways of thinking.
Yeah. But it comes with a cost for humans in particular, and many costs really. But what I just jumped to is that the physical toll it takes on our bodies, like we are terrestrial creatures. Like we are meant to live on Earth. We are of Earth.
Yeah, I agree.
And so when we leave Earth, they've done studies now because there's been astronauts for enough decades that the number one, the radiation exposure you get up there is high. And there's like higher rates of cancer and stuff that they've found in astronauts and stuff. And even in pilots, actually, that log too many hours in airplanes because you're above, you know, the layer of atmosphere that protects you. And anyway, so there is that cost where it's like we can go up there, but like it takes a physical toll. You know, it may shorten your life, actually. So to us becoming a multi-planet species, I think we will. But I don't know how much, like I, as much as I love Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek and all right. that stuff, I don't know if we actually will like colonize Mars, for example. I'm sure we're going to put people there. I can't wait for the first baby to be born there, because now then we need an astrology of Mars. And what the hell is that even going to be? I mean, I don't know how you do it. I think you just have to start the way they did on Earth and record things and transits and observe what happened for thousands of years. And then you have a set of data that, you know, you can make conclusions from. But yeah, like it might not be in my lifetime, but it could be. Who knows if things keep accelerating?
Yeah, I could see a breakaway civilization sort of scenario going on, like a Cloud Atlas, or like a, there's some other good examples where you almost have like a branch in the species where it's like these people decided to stay, these people went, and now they're like not even the same thing anymore. Because I think you wouldn't be the same thing. Like we are, like you said, we're terrestrial, like I personally, it's my opinion that we are one with the land, mm-hmm. or should be. Like, I don't think we're living that way, but like we should be.
No. My hot take is we actually might be from Mars.
I could see that too, because there's some remote viewing stuff.
We could have been a breakaway civilization, right?
Yeah, like, I think you're right. I mean, to me, there's just no doubt about that.
Yeah, but Mars is like, and there's a wild stuff about Mars, right? But there's evidence that it might have gotten like nuked into oblivion.
Yeah, there's like some xenon isotope or something that only occurs as a nuclear weapon signature. There's also like some CIA remote viewing stuff, and I talk about this a lot, but I encourage anyone else to look it up.
Yeah.
Some CIA remote viewing stuff where they remote viewed Mars like millions of years ago, and it was like these beings living in pyramids that were trying to escape. Like, it was basically like the story of Superman,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Krypton, like being destroyed and then like escaping. Yep. That's what it made me think of.
Yeah. And it could serve as a cautionary tale to us if you take the knowledge, if it's true, right, that there is hardcore nuclear weapons signatures in the atmosphere of Mars. So that planet was nuked into oblivion to the point that it like basically it made the whole planet inhospitable and like slowed its orbit. It did a bunch of other stuff I can't remember offhand. So what does that mean that our closest neighbor then had that happen, you know, a while back? I don't know, going back to life imitating art. I also recently, last year, I went on a JAG reading a bunch of old sci-fi, especially about Mars. So I read Ben Bova's Mars trilogy, which is all right. It's Ben Bova's best. He's kind of a trashy sci-fi writer, but I think it's fun. But
trashy sci-fi also, is awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. But also Ray Bradbury's Martian Chronicles.
Martian Chronicles is great, and it's so trippy.
So good. Everyone should read it, because like the conclusion of that, and I don't want to spoil it, because if you haven't read it, you should.
It just says some really good stuff about colonialism, and like it's
very,
it's good.
Very poignant, yeah, how that story ends. Yeah, so it just made me think of that when we were talking about the Mars.
Ray Bradbury hated the internet, by the way.
Good, he should. We all should. You were right, Ray.
You can go like read. I think he was like, it might even be that he was like blogging. No, I don't know. It could be letters. I'm not sure exactly what format it was in, but there's a lot of like him writing about the internet being like, this is mm-hmm. not good. it would be kind of amazing if it was a blog, because that's ironic, but I can't remember.
I'll have to look it up. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I read it online.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Mars.
It might've been scrubbed. Who knows? Oh yeah. Yeah. Let's do some Mars stuff.
So many things have been scrubbed. That's a whole other topic. I don't even know if I want to talk about it.
The memory hole. I also read 1984.
It makes me mad. And I'm like, I know what I saw. I know what I saw. I know it.
I read 1984 for the very first time, which is almost embarrassing to admit, because I'm an English major and I'm pretty sure I was supposed to
read. Are you actually? It. How do I not know that?
Yeah, I was a creative writing major. I have a creative writing degree.
Oh, amazing. I have an English lit degree. So.
Oh, yay. Nice.
I can't believe we just discovered that
just
today.
Never talked about it.
Today, yeah. I learned. Yeah.
I once dated someone for a couple of years before we both realized we were the same age. So that's funny.
We just didn't celebrate birthdays.
Also a Gemini. Yeah,
that never happens if you date an astrologer.
We were probably,
birth data.
Broken up every time it was actually like one of our birthdays. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Gotcha. It was like one of those type of things.
One of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Let's talk about Mars, because there is some big Mars stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. I'm already dreading it, which again, what I should really do is to, you know, prepare myself and do some remediation. But yeah, so the big Mars story this year is he stations retrograde on December 7th at 6 degrees of Leo and goes all the way back to 17 degrees of Cancer. And as someone with a bunch of planets and her IC in Cancer, I am not looking forward to that, especially because it's Mars. Mars is not happy in Cancer, so... Yeah, what I'm hoping, this is my third house, so communication of writing and books. What I'm really hoping for this, and my remediation tactic, might be to just write my ass off, like just do a ton of writing and just be like, here, Mars, make, you know, the fire flow through my keyboard, I guess, you know, or whatever that might be. Because you know, there's other
tongues of fire.
So much fire. Yeah. So yeah, that's the big Mars thing. I mean, Mars goes retrograde every 2 years or so. So it's not like this is a rare thing. But what it, you know, what it means is then Mars is going to be in the same sign or two for like a very extended period of time. And so we just you just kind of got to deal with it and get used to it. Oops, I'm just opening my screens here to look at the transits and stuff. But yeah, so basically starting in, I think it's October, he goes into Cancer. And so that kind of is almost like the start of it. It'll be Cancer in Leo for like most of, well, the rest of this year, starting in like October and then through to like next summer, basically. So buckle in, get used to it, because that's Mars. And again, the metaphor I use for Mars in Cancer is like a soldier at the dinner table. So kind of out of place, right? Like you picture someone in full soldier gear. I like to picture like a medieval warrior with like a sword strapped to him. And he's sitting there awkwardly with his gauntlets trying to like have a family dinner. Like it's just not a very comfortable scenario.
You just described like the way I felt my entire life.
Oh, okay.
I feel like that guy. The way I like to see it, and I was thinking about this last time Mars was in Cancer, because this is actually the way it felt for me, was like, you know, like when the blacksmith is forging the blade,
yeah,
it's like all red hot and he's like hitting it and like things are happening and it's getting the right shape and then he's got to quench it.
Yes.
And then that's a process that might happen multiple times, but that Mars in a water sign is like that. Quenching process. And it's like, it's very, what's happening in the metal is very like, it's a shock, right? But it's actually necessary in the forging process, and it strengthens
to strengthen it and harden it and make it a better blade. It's a good, that is a very productive way of looking at it too. It's like, what do you need to do to like strengthen your blade, you know, to strengthen, you know, this tool that you're going to use.
Yeah, even though we all like the red hot times where we're like hitting it, you know.
Yeah, smacking it hard. Yeah, satisfying.
You got to quench.
I like that. Okay, so I'm going to use that. Yeah, there will be blog article about the quenching.
Yeah, do it. That'd be great because you probably, I mean, you could go into that much deeper than me. That was just kind of my.
No, I love it. That's a great metaphor. Yeah.
So there's some other big Mars stuff too, right? Like
So before that,
what about Mars summer, Uranus?
Yeah, Mars Uranus, throw a Molotov cocktail, baby. So when is that? Let me get that date for us here. It's in the summer. So yeah, Mars is gonna conjoin Uranus, and they do it on the exact degree where Algol is, the Medusa star.
Good times.
Yeah, totally good times. It's going to be spicy. Where am I here? So it is. Oh, goodness. I'm all over the place. It is like July 14th, 14, 15. Yeah, somewhere in there. So, there's 26 Taurus, which is also where the fixed star Algol is. And Algol is, she's a potent one. So the symbol often is the severed head of Medusa, the Gorgon. And so she is associated with like some pretty intense stuff. People who have Algol in their chart really prominently tend to just be like very intense people and just like, yeah, it's like, whoa. So that's an intense type of energy. I keep saying the word intense, but yeah. And I mean, you get Mars and Uranus together, and I said Molotov cocktail, but kind of, right? Because Mars is the fire and the, you know, the rage and stuff. And then Uranus is like anarchy and liberation, but like to an extreme level. So you just picture like rioters whipping Molotov cocktails through things. Maybe they feel justified in doing that, but that's just how it goes, right? So yeah. And then with Algol there, it's just like, I don't know, I could maybe see even some like, maybe there'll be some crazy women's liberation type stuff happening just because it is Mother Algol, but we'll see.
Hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, buckle up. That summer that's going to be going to be a little bit of explosiveness happening. But it is in the sign of Taurus. And like, so again, Taurus is the other sign that Mars does not do so well in, right? Like he wants to be on the battlefield of Aries charging ahead. Then he hits the like green pastures of Taurus and he's just like, ugh, I don't want to go for a hike. So then he's just kind of dragging his feet.
Yeah. He's like trying to ride a bull.
Yeah, which doesn't go well usually.
Right.
Bulls do when you jump in the back of them. But yeah, so that's the summer. And then, I mean, pretty quickly after that, Mars goes into Gemini. So he's going to heat things up there with Jupiter and conjoin Jupiter in sort of middle of August, about a month after the one with Uranus. So that'll be very different. And you talk about like new technology, AI, but also we talk about energy and new forms of energy, kind of going back to our earlier one. I think with the real shift to air in the next couple years, I mean, with Pluto and Aquarius, I mean, we have Jupiter and Gemini, but then starting in 2025, Uranus goes into Gemini. That to me seems like novel technology. Could particularly be energy technology too, but just novel tech, and it could be also weapons tech. So maybe
I was going to say,
when you bring Mars and Gemini, it could be like, oh, look at this crazy new weapon,
well,
guys. Like, ah.
how is novel tech usually historically introduced? Not the best way.
No.
Yeah.
We know it happened, actually. The world wars have that signature. The bomb dropping was, yeah, that was novel tech. So, and I
It's like,
believe.
we it's gonna like, hey, look, we created this cool thing that could like help everybody be fed and clothed, but we're just gonna use it to melt people.
Yeah, great. So, how about that? I have so many thoughts and feelings about nuclear technology, but it does seem to track that with Pluto going into Aquarius. I mean, with maybe some other stuff too, but it does seem to track that maybe nukes become the tech, right? Like, there are already ton there's tons of nuclear energy all over Europe in particular, but I mean, it's coming throughout North America too. And I think it's because, and not to be political, you can believe whatever you want, but my understanding of solar and wind is they're just not all they're cracked up to be, and the costs associated with them are really high. So, and they're not able to produce energy cheaply anyway, put it that way. Whereas nuclear, theoretically, I guess it is maybe cheap. I don't know that much about it, to be perfectly honest, but it does seem like it's just that's the way the world's going. And we're just going to have nuclear silos everywhere, which I don't know how I feel about.
Yeah,
Welcome to
they're very
Springfield.
ominous. Yeah. There's
Yeah.
one that you can see from the Etowah Mounds just north of here. And it's a very strange juxtaposition. It's like this
Yeah.
ancient earthworks, very impressive, very beautiful, next to the river. And then you're on top of this and you look over and there's just these imposing smoke stacks.
And they just look so, they weirdly look so retro and futuristic at the same time. It's like this
Yeah.
weird design. Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely
There's,
have a vibe.
yeah, they do have a vibe. And actually, so I mean, now that we're talking about nukes and stuff, yeah, like the last time, well, when the bombs fell on Hiroshima, it was Mars Uranus in Gemini. So, you know, with Uranus going into Gemini, it'll be probably, I haven't looked, but probably like 2026 when their first conjunction will occur, but they'll have a few while Uranus is there. So again, though, I don't want to scare people, and I don't want to be like, this is going to happen, guys, like at all. But I do think that like something of that nature of novel tech, potentially energy or weapons or both, could be what occurs during that transit. I mean, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it is what it is. Can't don't want to sugarcoat it too much.
No, I mean, yeah, we've been here before, we'll be here again.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's Mars. I mean, you know, the retrograde cycle, it's a good time to get really familiar with those one or two signs that he'll be in your chart and how it feels like to have Mars there. So just watch your energy levels, people. That's my standard advice, because Mars tends to go like, I've experienced this for sure. When he's retrograde, he doesn't like going backwards, right? Mars wants to go forward fast. So when he's going backwards, he's cranky, and he's in Cancer, so he's going to be even crankier. So I think energy levels are probably going to be probably lower, but they also tend to fluctuate really wildly during retrograde. So like one day you'll be like berserker rage, and then the next day you're going to be like flat dead, like I can't do anything. Or sometimes that's in the span of like an hour. So it's just really all over the place. And yeah. So yeah, that's kind of tends to be how it goes. I mean, other than Mars, thinking, you know, we talked about the Uranus conjunctions, with Mars as well. And then other than that, the second half of the year, of course, we get Eclipses coming up. And so, well, we didn't talk about eclipses yet. My God. So you know what I have to say? I was so happy when that solar eclipse on April 8th was over, because my God, everyone just would not stop talking about it. And I knew that was going to happen, of course, because it was very
Remember
dramatic.
When all the Christians were raptured during it?
Yeah.
That was cool.
No, all my neighbors are gone. They're just not there anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, I was sick as a dog during that time, right? Because again, that the lunar eclipse kicked off that season at the end of March, and I was okay for a bit. And then right before that solar eclipse, I got sick. Again, it was in my 6-12 houses, so those two eclipses. So yeah, so it's not surprising I got sick. So I was just kind of hunkered down at home anyway, but that's tend to be what I do during eclipses. But Tim, what did you do during that eclipse?
So my
right in the heart of it.
Yeah, my journeys took me to, I think I was in Indiana, right outside of Fort Wayne, and I was in maybe 99.98 totality.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff I was looking at was like, you have to go to 100% or you won't see any of the effects. I'm pretty sure those were just like travel agencies or something, like
probably
travel ads. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, right. Because like I of course, ignored all the best advice to the contrary, like I usually do, and said, fuck it, I'm going outside and I'm just going to stare at this bad boy. I mean, I didn't stare at it like, you know, like burn your eyes out, stare at it. But I was definitely like, looked at it a couple times with my naked eye to just get, and it was fantastic. It was magnificent. And, you know, I had felt pretty bad before the eclipse, but as soon as that eclipse happened, I got like a whoosh, and, a lot of things kind of unblocked for me. It was a lot of progress made, yeah, just in my energy levels, in my way of thinking, in my way of engaging. It was actually really nice. And I don't know, you know, I just, I'm trying to think of what house it was in for me. What sign was it in?
Pulling it up. It was in Aries. It was at 19 degrees in Aries.
Okay, so it was in my 10th house.
Yeah, so you actually had a nodal return very recently too.
Yes, so it probably played into that somehow.
It
More
did,
so.
Definitely. It was like a degree off, not even. It was half a degree from your north node, your natal north. So, yeah, I mean, nodal returns are often a period of like, just, it's hard to say. I always say that. It's hard to say. What kind of an astrologer am I? No, but it's, they're like yeah. fate.
You have to be very confident, even if you're completely wrong.
Yeah, totally. No, no. Yeah, like there are often periods where it's like, well, next chapter of your life, but it's also like the fated events that have led you to this point, and then like kicking it becomes another fated event that kicks off, you know, the next day. And I'm kind of rambling now, but regardless, it would be super potent.
I have to give a lot of credit to my flourishing Rahu devotional practice though, too, you know, because
right.
I am in Rahu Dasha. So I found this out like a couple years ago that I'm in, and I don't know too much about Vedic astrology, but I looked up enough to understand kind of what's going on with my specific situation, right? Like how you do. I think that's just how I've always started out learning. And anything with astrology is like, okay, what's my thing? And then I can kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so it's like an 18-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in it until like 2032 or something, where Rahu is like my ruling planet for that period of time. Mm-hmm. And so I was already getting into the Thai stuff, and I think I actually found that out after I had gotten like a Rahu amulet. And so it was really interesting
nice.
There. Yeah. And it was like given to me. I didn't even buy it. Like, and, so I've been, you know, like full moon chanting to Rahu and like wearing this amulet a lot. And so with the amulets, what like, so in the Thai system, what a Rahu practice is for is astrological remediation of like across the board. Because it's like, to me, the way I look at it is like, and I know you have different opinions about this and it's fun to talk about. It's like, if a dragon lives outside of my village and comes and eats shit all the time, like, well, maybe I should just give it a sheep every now and then. And then, you know, it seems to like appease it and make things better. Now it started off that way, but now the way it's come now, it's just like, it's a great ally. He's a great ally. So, you know, I don't know if I can, I'm not trying to recommend that for everybody, but for me, where I'm at, it's been great.
That's awesome. No, I mean, I think it makes sense. Yeah. Feed the dragon, what you choose to feed him versus him coming in and taking whatever he wants to eat, which could
be you.
Eat.
So. He's going to eat.
Yeah. He's hungry.
Yeah.
Hungry boy. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool. It makes sense. Like looking at that eclipse in your chart, like it was up in your 11th and like bang on your north node. So it makes sense that that was going to be like a pretty, you know, key moment for you. You know, Mercury was retrograde there. It's opposite your natal Mercury. Yeah, no, it,
my and the way events, the way events,
go, cons- that makes sense.
Right, right. The way events conspired, was like, I got stuck there for like 2 days. Like I wasn't going to be there. And then like, well, the way things worked out, like I got a load and then it canceled and it made me sit there all weekend.
That was the Mercury retrograde.
Oh yeah. Force. It was, yeah, that was, that's yeah. Very strong in that industry. That's really crazy.
No kidding, man. You, if you were going to keep, well, I mean, you're still going to keep trucking, just not like long haul. Right. So
yeah,
I think you should probably have some Mercury. You should have some Mercury stuff in your car or your truck. Like just kind of, yeah.
I've got, I need to find it again. I've got like a cool, it's like a pendant made out of a silver Mercury. Like, you know, the dimes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a series of dimes that actually have Mercury on them and they're silver.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That would be a perfect Mercury, like talisman or whatever.
I have it. I need to dig it up because I have just like boxes of magical shit that I just like have been sitting there.
Yeah. It tends to accumulate. Eh?
Half of it is like literal trash. Too. It's like
just throw it out.
Right. It's like half burned candles and stuff. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Ashes all over the place. Yeah.
Well, cool. What else? Is there anything else that we want to specifically look at? I mean, I know there's like kind of a lot. We don't really have to get into everything, but
no, it's true. Yeah. So I mean, just to conclude, like eclipses, you know, we get them in September and it's the first one is a lunar at 15 Pisces. So that'll be the first eclipse into the new Virgo Pisces axis. So the nodes are shifting, not till next year, but they're shifting from Aries, Libra to Virgo, Pisces. So again, with eclipses, they open up windows of time related to that axis in your chart will be kind of what it corresponds to. So whatever your Aries, Libra axis is, you're kind of wrapping up some things. We still get some eclipses next year that are in Aries. And I think one more in Libra, they might be done. Anyway, I think there's just one in Aries and then it's Virgo Pisces next year. So yeah. So one more there. And then, so Virgo Pisces, I mean, whatever that is.
So that's a big shift too.
Yeah. Yeah. The nodes shifting is a big shift. Yeah. It's like a new window opening up, other one closing.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it tends to hit depending on, of course, your charts and what that is. So we'll see. I think I'm looking forward to it leaving Aries Libra just because it is kind of a war axis. And we don't need to get into all that, but what happened in the Middle East was very much aligned with the eclipses and very much a lot because both Israel and Netanyahu, the leader of Israel, are like big Libra things, and the eclipse happened like anyway. So long story short, it hit both the charts like very, very dead on. So sadly, that conflict probably is not going to wrap up. Hopefully maybe could start next year once when that node shifts, but I don't know, like it's not surprising that it's been prolonged because in history has shown us that in that region too, tends to drag out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What about
Virgo Pisces though? I mean, that means as if you say Pisces and we talked about Saturn Neptune, that means we get eclipses with Saturn Neptune. So that's also kind of going to be like, whoa.
Yeah. I just add to the whole energy of occlusion.
Yeah. Like what are you not seeing? Cause eclipses are really great for her obscuring because that is what they are. They are an obscuring. So the question you always got to ask, and you won't probably have an answer for a while, is what am I not seeing? What am I being blocked out of? And then it's only in hindsight when you look back and you go, it was that thing.
Well, that's a great question for divination.
Yes.
What am I not seeing that I need to see?
Yeah.
A great one. If for personally, like in my experience, I've gotten a lot out of that.
Yeah, it's a good one. Lately, I've just been asking questions about who's going to win the hockey game because I started doing sports astrology.
Nice. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Like, what's that? Sure. What have you learned?
So it's, oh my God, I've learned nothing, I feel. I don't know what I'm doing. This is my disclaimer. Do not take my bets seriously.
This is not financial advice.
This is not financial advice. Yeah. I will not be held accountable for anything you may do with this information. I just got into it. So, I mean, I'm from Edmonton. I still live in Edmonton. And the Oilers are huge here. Hockey is huge. We're a hockey town. We love it. I was born just, you know, like a couple months, not even, after the Oilers won the first cup. So there's always that sense of like, we got to get back to the glory days. Anyway, so long story short, when the Oilers do well and they're in the playoffs, the whole city's, you know, in playoff fever, and it's infectious. You know, I don't really care that much about hockey, truthfully, but there's something about it. A hockey game on is very nostalgic for me because, you know, growing up, it was always on. And so it's just been kind of fun. All my coworkers and, you know, family members are super into it. So I thought, you know what, let's make it more interesting for me, which is let's look at the astrology of it and try to do some like sports betting. So I've just got into it like a little bit. And I read a book that I, you know, gave some very clear sort of, this is how you evaluate like a game chart. But I am suspicious of a lot of the stuff in that. So I'm still kind of trying to test these techniques out and figure out what I think makes the most sense. And a lot of it is basically, you know, look at the first house and the seventh house. First house is, so again, this book was like, that's your team. If you're cheering for a team, like if you have a personal stake in it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the seventh house is, yeah, it does, except it doesn't with NHL teams because you're looking at the same chart. So I'm an Oilers fan. So, okay. So the first house is me, the Oilers, right? Because they're my team. But a Dallas fan for this series would be also looking at the same chart and would also say that the first house is their, you know what I mean? So for me, I just don't think that works that well. I don't know. So I'm using the first house as the home team and the seventh house is the away team. I think that makes sense, right? And it does switch back and forth throughout the series.
Oh, yeah, totally. But if you're looking at it, then it's going to be, okay.
There's two methods,
I
right?
See
it's
it.
Like you can look at it as like the first house is your team and the other is your opponent. Or you can look at it as, you know, first house is home team, seventh house.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. That's interesting. Yeah, I feel like that kind of unlocks something for me just for astrology in general.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Well, the seventh house in mundane is open enemies or partners. If you're doing natal, it's your spouse.
Right.
Or who could also be your open enemy sometimes.
Well, they're most likely to be, right?
Yeah. You know them anyway. They're not like a hidden enemy. The 12th house is for your hidden enemies. Yeah.
I think statistically, if it's going to happen, it's going to be them. Yeah.
Probably actually. What are the rates of murders of spouses? Like,
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's why it's so hard to catch a serial killer because there's no like overt connection.
The typical motivation is, you know, yeah.
Right.
It's true. So anyway, yeah, so sports astrology. So you're mainly focusing on the first and the seventh, right? And then you look at the ruler of the first and the ruler of the seventh and you evaluate their condition. That's the basics of what I'm doing. I'm sure there is more to it. And I've already heard tons of conflicting stuff. So I'm by no means an expert. I'm just kind of trying to muddle through this as best as I can. But so far it's been okay. I did predict the Oilers would lose last night and they did. I'm predicting the Rangers are going to win tonight. And then tomorrow, I think the Oilers are actually going to win two games straight. Yay, go Oilers. And if I'm wrong, then I, again, need to reevaluate these techniques. But yeah, basically, and the reason I'm saying that is just because, the first house ruler for the, where is my chart here? Hang on, sorry. Oh my God, solar fire is all messed up, as it often is. So yeah, so like, the reason I'm thinking it might not be good for, or why I thought the Oilers would lose last night was because Venus represented the Oilers and she's now combust. So she's like 2-3 degrees away from the sun. And then also Jupiter had just gone into Gemini where the sun and Venus are, and Jupiter is debilitated in Gemini. So normally you'd think, oh, Jupiter being conjoining, you know, their ruler is a good thing. But not if it's a debilitated Jupiter, because he actually sucks in that context. So anyway, that's the theory.
So that's like someone coming in being like, I've got this. I can help. But they actually really suck at it.
And they just suck. Like, just it's like, thank you. You let a goal into our net. You pulled the goalie 2 minutes early and they scored, which is what happened. Although we are already down at that point. So anyway, yeah. So it's like, yeah, I'm trying to help. And you just fall on your face and it doesn't work. So the reason I think we get two games that the Oilers could win is because now they'll be Mars and Dallas will be Venus. And so Venus is still combust and still conjoined to debilitated Jupiter. So I think that's why we may see a couple games. Could be wishful thinking, but we'll see.
I like it. I'm gonna have to do this with the Braves, and maybe it'll explain to me why that's going the way it is.
I can't comment on that at all. Yeah, just started with hockey, but yeah, if I get really good at the hockey, maybe I'll just start sports.
No, I'm just gonna. I'm going to have to ask you how you're doing it, and then I'm going to apply it to my team.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm not going to make you do it. I mean, I guess I could, but that seems like something that costs money. So speaking of things that cost money,
yes.
Do you want to talk about any of your offerings? Like, are you back on the books? Like, I know you said you kind of shut down consultations for a little bit.
I did. No, I'm back up. Did one this morning even, actually. And so my consults are open. So if you go to either melpriestley.ca or earthshineastrology.com, you'll find me, or Google Mel Priestley, you'll find me. Either way, I'm not hard to find on the internet. And yeah, just come to my website and I do all your standard sort of types of consults. So if you just want a basic natal, if you've never had a reading before, it's a good place to start. Year ahead, you know, I love doing year aheads. And even if you've not had a reading before and you want more of a year ahead type thing, cool. That's awesome. I love doing those too. And I have some other types too. Like I've started doing like some synastry readings, you know, which is reading relationships between two people. You'll obviously need the other person's birth data if you want that. But yeah, so just go to my site and check it all out. I have not written anything recently, but as I said, I can feel the gears turning again. So I'm probably going to have some new blog posts soonish, hopefully. Maybe the next one will be on NHL astrology, because that's kind of what I'm doing now and it's fun. And so, hey, might as well share the love. There's also not that much written about sports astrology, I think.
It's a ripe field, I think.
Yeah, but it's kind of like financial astrology, because I feel like if there was a very clear and well-known set of techniques, there'd be a bunch of rich astrologers.
It would be used. Yeah.
Totally. Like, I mean, if I crack the code, you can damn well bet I'll be placing some bets quietly on the side. Though just by my nature, I'm not a gambler. So I'll be starting with very small bets, if I do any. Like, I'm not going to be like, bet the house.
It's very disconcerting to me to watch money just like vanish into the air like that. Like, I'm kind of more of like a buying shit kind of guy.
Same. Yeah. Well, I mean, with Taurus rising and all my stuff in Cancer, yeah, I like stuff. So I'd rather just
Taurus moon here. So yes, I like stuff. Yeah, I like to like wear it.
Buy stuff. Yeah. Wear it, eat it, drink it, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so that's me.
And I will say too, I've gotten a reading from Mel and it was awesome. I'm still like, it's something I still look at. It was like more than a year ago.
It was a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably time to re up on that. Cause I think we did some, what is it called when you progress? Is it a progression?
Oh, secondary progressions. Yeah.
Where you kind of look ahead and,
Yeah, I use a few timing techniques. I use solar arc secondary progressions, and then I look at annual perfections too. Those are kind of like my three main things I do and the transit. So four, I guess, for year ahead forecasts. Yeah. So it's great because they do give you some ideas of what's coming down the road.
Yeah, and it's just a great thing to be able to think with, because I don't know, just any for me at least. Any sort of it's like an organizational tool.
It is,
for looking at it, right? Like it helps me to kind of channel my thoughts in the right way. And again, just like the idea that things are not permanent is just a really important thing for me to look at too, right?
Yeah, for good and bad, right? Like if you're in great time and you're like, oh, this will change, aw. But if you're in a shit time, it's like, it will change and, you know, you will have good and bad. But even just knowing, I always say knowing is half the battle, but it really is. It's probably
G.I. Joe.
For real though, right? Like if you know, okay, this Mars retrograde, for example, is going to hit me where it hurts. And I just know that ahead of time. So I'm not going to schedule myself for anything super heavy sort of between December and March next year, because I'm probably not going to be, you know, able to handle much more. Or at least when shit hits the fan, then I'll be like, well, that's why. So, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's
that's just more me right there. I'm like, I'm not going to change the way I'm doing stuff. I'm just going to have something to blame now. And
well, that's what astrology is great for. You just right. yell at the planets, right?
Well, yeah. I'm going to wrestle the planets. I'm going to like go to war with Mars and see how that turns out for me. And it usually ends up with a big slice of humble pie. But you know what? There's nothing like a big slice of humble pie to learn where I'm limited, where to learn my limitations, to see where I can show up, to see where I've grown. Humble pie is also called perspective. So,
yes, and
to
wisdom,
me,
right?
it's all progress. You know, even if it's two steps forward, one step back, whatever you call that. But mm-hmm. you know, I can't. It's interesting, right? Because the way that astrology hits for me is like, I don't want to look at it, and that'll happen for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, I'm sick of being blind to this. And then I'll get like really into it again.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually kind of the way I work in a lot of ways. Like, I'm going to go through it until I'm like, I'm not interested in having that experience anymore. So then mm-hmm. I've come to like, okay, so what can I look at to have a different experience?
Yeah. Yeah. And even as someone who like is an astrologer and does readings for people, I still go through periods where I'm not really closely following the transits, and then I get caught by surprise, which I think, I don't know, maybe I'm a bad astrologer, but it's, I think it's also just kind of human. Like you just live your life and you're like, oh yeah.
Sometimes I just got to experience a transit.
Well, that too. Yeah. And you look back and you go, oh, okay, I get it now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it'd be exhausting to get up and look at the charts every day and be like, how is this going to, and I mean, I have done that where I'm like tracking things very, very closely, and it's, they're great teachers. But what I've found just living more like, I guess, flow state is where the planets will tell me when they want me to look at them. So, and it usually as a consulting astrologer, it always comes through my clients. So I knew about that Mars retrograde, obviously, because, you know, I do look ahead, you know, a little bit. So I do know kind of, you know, the basics of what's coming, but I hadn't really thought about it too much yet until I would say about a couple, right before I kind of shut things down. I had like three clients that the Mars hits like in a, like I'm a little worried actually for a couple of them. But anyway, yeah, like it's going to be very big for them. And so I took that as like, okay, I got, you know, several clients in a row where this is a big deal for them. So I had to spend time learning about what that is and thinking about it and thinking about construction waves to work with that and all of that. So I just took that as like, well, that Mars wanted me to look at him now and not then. And, you know,
that's interesting that you say that, because this is actually an experience I have when I'm reading tarot for people. Is that so, like a lot of the time I'm reading for them, but I'm looking at the cards being like, y'all motherfuckers are talking to me too, and I can see you doing that. Mm-hmm. And they'll
the card
be cards
flies out of the deck and you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Or like even in their reading, but like there will be cards that I keep getting over and over again that will show up in their reading too. And it's like that card is being like, okay. Mm-hmm. This energy is expressing in your life, but it's also expressing in this person's life. Look at me, understand me, time to learn me. Mm-hmm. And that's a really cool way to look at it. I like that a lot. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, yeah. There's always patterns, man, patterns.
It's all patterns, man.
Speaking of tarot, just one quick story last night. So, I mean, I'm not just using astrology for the sports stuff. I'm throwing, well, a few things, because I don't necessarily believe astrology is actually the best way to predict the outcome of a sports match. But, you know, I'm trying it out and it's fun. But I also threw cards, and then I actually was using some pendulum as well, just to try to, you know, verify myself. But when I threw cards last night, I'm like, will the Oilers win? It was like High Priestess, Four of Swords, and the Star. And like the team that the Oilers is playing is the Stars. So I was like,
oh,
Oilers.
Yeah.
The Stars are going to win.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Wow, that's good.
It was so literal. I was like, hey, I don't even need to look at this, the astrology chart, because I just threw these cards that were just so obvious. It was funny.
Yeah, leave it to tarot to like smack you in the face.
100%.
Or, you know, and conversely, like, right, or be really yeah. obtuse and confusing. Yeah. Just depending.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great talking. I've had a blast. And if there's anything else you want to mention,
no, I think I'm good. Thanks so much for having me on again.
Yeah,
this is awesome. Always love coming on.
Yeah, always a good time. And it's just great to be back. So thank you for coming on. And thank you to everybody that listened.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.